Lampard.
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast. On Monday, the 16th of December, 2019, I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Woo.
And Robert Kemp.
Hello.
This is episode...
some classically bad intros.
I didn't have anything... have any asides today. I'm just feeling like I should greet people for once. Okay.
Greet them.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Konnichiwa.
What?
What?
Apparently this is a special episode. Why is that?
Apparently.
It's because it's... well, it might be roughly the 256th episode we've done.
Approximately.
Roughly, because precision's not important.
We have some wiggle room for the Tardcasts and point ones and...
weirdly missing episodes.
And weirdly missing episodes.
So what's significant about my personal favourite number, 256?
Well, it's the first number that's outside the range of an 8-bit integer.
There you go.
It's the total number of combinations an 8-bit integer can have.
Probably not the reason that we like it, though. I think the reason we like it is because it's like 4 times 32.
Yeah, but that's the same reason.
But not from a mathematical reason, more for a pixel-based grid reason.
I'm sure there are far more mathematically interesting numbers, but...
sure.
Yeah, but it was 32 pixels rather than 30 because it was using...
because it divides evenly into a screen resolution.
Exactly, which also based on 8 bits.
Powers of 2.
Exactly, powers of 2. And it's the best power of 2 because 64 is too boring. and you can't go, you're not going to go higher than 256. That would be like too long. So it's the ideal number.
I was going to say, what is 16 bits? Starts hitting like, what, 50-something thousand? Something like that.
Yeah, no one's going to remember that for a podcast number.
Exactly, I've already forgotten it.
So there we are. 256 is special to us, and now by extension you, because this is a special episode.
Eat it.
Yeah.
Eat it.
We haven't quite decided how to make it special, so we're going to start with the normal stuff.
Yeah, we're going to do news anyway.
Stuff happens.
Otherwise, we're going to have like an entire month and a half where we don't do news, which probably is not great.
Yeah, so...
given that hot off the press news is the Xbox thingy was announced.
That's Xbox like
the,
thingy.
The most hot.
I mean, yeah, it's most hot.
I mean, I just love how like PlayStation nailed it with the names. They went with PlayStation 2, genius, and then 3, 4. No one has to worry about naming the damn thing. You just call it PlayStation 5 and be done with it.
Xbox didn't want to be one generation behind in their numbers.
No, so they screwed themselves by going straight to 360, and they've been stuffed ever since.
But they should have continued from 360. That would have been the solution.
720.
Yeah, exactly. We all said it at the time. Just keep adding numbers in increments of 360 and you'll be fine.
They could have called this new one the Xbox 4K, right? Because it's the first one that's like a true 4K platform. Yeah, and then it would be the Xbox 8K.
They should call it Xbox 4X and only allowed that kind of game to be developed for it.
That would have been difficult.
And they couldn't call it the Xbox 2020 edition either, because then the life cycle of these things is like 5-odd years. So
it's going to sound old by the time. Yeah.
You call it the Xbox XX for 2020.
20XDX.
See? 20, there you go. Come up with stupid names.
You'd have to call it XXXX if you wanted to be 2020, and then we're back to 4X again.
In 20XDX, war was beginning.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't called it Xbox Next yet.
Someone set up us the console. I think that name was being thrown around a little bit start of the X-Bone.
Last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably better than X-Bone, but I don't know.
I mean, what are we going to shorten the... hang on, let's just say it. The Xbox Series X. I mean, is it just going to be the XSX?
The like XX.
If you're shortening it. The XS?
The XX.
The double X. I'm playing it on my double X.
It's the same thing that we said that was going to be the problem when they made the Xbox S, where you're like, now you've got the S and the X, essentially. Mispronunciations ensue.
X-Bone X.
Like... I didn't realize that the Tesla models were named. Obviously, they're a joke, right? Did you? Apparently, did you know that?
No.
That, you know, they started with the Model S, and then there's the Model 3 and the Model X, and the next one is the Model Y.
S3X.
XY.
Robin's suddenly forgotten what Leet Speak is.
It's like Leet Speak.
Oh!
That's so stupid.
Oh!
Yeah. But then they've ruined it by having Cybertruck.
The sexy Cybertruck,
yeah. Oh, man. We haven't talked about the Cybertruck. We should probably talk about that at some point.
Can I turn that into a haiku? Is that where they go?
Probably.
They can't go any further with one word, apparently. Yeah. They've cut that one off. They want to, no, wait.
They've got the first line, haven't they? Sexy Cybertruck. Then they need 7 syllables.
So, the Series X. I mean... Anyway, I'm just getting distracted by the name because they have to come up with a stupid name.
Because let's talk about it. This is what you do with a new console series. You know, it's a weird name, right? Because like you'd think that given that, okay, X is obviously important to the brand, but they did the 1X, right? So starting the next series of consoles with Series X.
And Series kind of implies there's like going to be another series, right? Right?
Well... Okay, so there was always the rumors of there being 2 SKUs flying around. The Anaconda, which is what we saw, which is the high-tier console, and Lockhart.
That word is ruined by... What's her name?
My Anaconda don't...
Yeah, that's the one.
Because it's got fun, huh? Well, technically, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Sir Mix-a-Lot, yeah. Sorry, I meant...
It's to blame, but...
Fair enough, I'll blame Sir Mix-a-Lot then. Yeah. Rather than... It. Why can't I remember the name of the most famous woman ever? Not Iggy Azalea.
Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj. That's it. Nicki Minaj. There we go. She's dropped off, hasn't she?
I haven't heard anything from her for ages.
Anyway. Yeah.
I'm not particularly seeking her out. Let's put it that way.
No.
Series X. Yeah, it's like, so maybe they'll have a Series S as well. Or
God, I hope not.
Or it'll be the Series XS or the S Series X. So when they do a pro version of this, like a couple years down the line, like 2023-ish.
The Xbox Series 1 X1.
The Xbox Series X. Maybe they will just call it the Double X. Series Double X. Or the Series X2.
So then they'll be happy with the XX.
Yeah. No, but then maybe they'll be happy to drop start coming up with normal numbers at that point. And they'll be like, this is the X2.
It'll be XI. They'll go Roman numerals and it will have been 10 all along. Like,
the Series 10. Oh. I'm getting it wrong.
Yeah, but so then they'll get in a Mac OS situation where,
yep, exactly.
Where everyone calls it OS X and the Apple would get really annoyed. No, it's OS X.
Microsoft will do it backwards.
It's the iPhone.
That's what they want to do.
It's the iPhone 10. No, it's not. You put an X there.
Yeah, they put an X. Yeah, then they did it in reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. I guess that was the same, right? Yeah.
IPhone yeah, same 10. Way around. Yeah. They wanted same to call thing. It the 10, but it's
but they
like,
put an X there.
You put an X there.
What have they done now? Oh, XS, right? Oh, but they must call that. They don't call that the 10S, do they? Oh, fuck, who cares? Sorry, I just realized I didn't care at all.
It just dawned on you.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about a vertical black slab as opposed to a horizontal black slab?
Well, how pissed off is Rob that it's not going to fit in his entertainment center, except maybe where his amp is, maybe.
I mean, it might be fine, but like, because we're still... There is a long-running plan to eventually get rid of all this stuff and change it.
Always.
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah. Never going to happen.
It's been several
about
years.
One thing at a time, at most.
I still haven't found an entertainment center I like and would work in this room.
I mean, you'll just have to stack it on top of one of your speakers, basically. Or the other way around, potentially.
Yeah. Are you even automatically sold on the next Xbox? Like,
well, so, the one thing that is pushing me in that direction... is Game Pass,
right?
And the fact that Halo Infinite will be a launch title.
Is it a launch title? Oh, okay. Well, they need that.
Yeah,
they need a killer app. It better be good. Those guys, yeah. Dude.
So it's Yeah. I've played that Halo Reach. It's got problems.
Oh, really? Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Well, we might not.
Yeah, episode. Maybe not. Yeah. Unless you want to turn that into some news, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. The verticality of it is a slight problem for my setup. I'm not going to lie. I could rearrange things down there a little bit. It could work.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It might be close to being too tall to fit in that gap.
Yeah, well, it's not actually, like, when if you think about, like, a controller stood upright, it's not... That is nearly half the height of that thing. So it's not a huge device, actually. They've just chosen to orient it vertically. Now, there's some conjecture that that's actually because of, like, heat. They want the heat to rise through the case and
just be
blasted out
the top. You mean like
the V-shape
on the PlayStation 5 where the vents are on the top?
It's a dev kit.
I'm still sticking to this.
No.
I'm telling you. No. Weird shape. Now the Xbox have done it, weird shapes are a thing.
It's not that weird a shape. It's a big oblong. It's just upright. It's in that same plastic they used for the X as well. So I can't just call the X anymore. The Xbox One X as opposed to the Series X. I don't know. Things all right. Does the other question is does the grill actually glow green like it look like they made it look like?
Yeah, a question.
Is it actually
green? They could easily make it glow green. Obviously, like no. I think the like blue LED glow like in the Wii and stuff was a bit over the top.
Okay.
But that was not like an intentional glow. That was just like this was the LED we used.
The Wii's was hella bright. That was its problem. It was so bright.
Blue LEDs in general are like too bright usually. If you put them alongside other LEDs,
just because they require more energy, isn't it, to power? Or shouldn't they be dimmer by that logic? Like just because they require more energy to make.
It's not
trying
to talk about physics.
Well, yeah, I'm not actually quite. Maybe they're just more efficient.
I have no idea.
Hmm. Or maybe,
the Wii's one was totally worse because of its notification flicker, right? If your Wii wanted to tell you anything, the drive bay just started flashing.
Yeah,
even when you weren't using the thing, so it would just be like in the corner of the room going. Bah, 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 bah. That's what flashing sounds like.
That's what you now you've got a speaker in there.
I think it looks all right. It's a featureless black cube. Oblong, but that didn't mean there were plenty of tweets coming out about hey, the age of the fun looking console is well and truly gone now.
Yeah, it is. But to be fair, the original Xbox, I mean, it was fine, but it's just a box of a PC, right, with a bit of plastic molding around it,
and that's pretty much
all you need now. I mean, Xbox One is even more so that, right?
Well, yeah, and it's highly likely PlayStation's just going to be exactly the same kind of thing.
And the Nintendo ones are constrained by being an actual handheld device now, so they can't look crazy like a GameCube or whatever.
No, they've got to look functional.
Yeah,
just because
they need to be functional.
To be.
Yeah,
yeah, and they're symmetrical Joy-Cons and sort of
symmetrical not actually symmetrical.
But,
as all
you know, Joy-Cons. Symmetrical in terms of outer shape.
Yeah, the wackiness is over.
So maybe PlayStation 5 does look like a V.
Yep, exactly.
I highly doubt
hold
it.
Hold the torch. I mean, I'm with you there. There was another nice little tweet out there that had that was saying it's like, oh, these two would go well together, and it had the Xbox opening like a fridge, and then the V in the PlayStation being used to heat a pizza slice.
You could probably heat a pizza on these things.
Come on.
It's not the George Foreman, no, but who grills a pizza?
You put something else in there. It doesn't always have to be pizza.
It does when Rob's around.
You probably could grill a pizza if you put it upside down so the cheese was on the grill.
I was just going to fry my pizza.
Like, yeah, I don't know how that would actually pan out in the end.
Pan out.
Whether you'd be able, whether that would even manage to cook the base.
Yeah, you'd have to have the bread would have to be like specifically friable, like maybe a tortilla, maybe a slightly thicker tortilla, so it's got some rigidity that you can flip.
Let's not talk about food.
You get hungry already.
I'm always angry. At, like, dinner time.
That's his secret.
I don't know what there is to say. There's a new Xbox coming, and it's got a dumb name.
Yeah. Well, we didn't really learn anything important, I guess, from this, other than its shape. I mean, we don't know if that drive on it is like a 4K Blu-ray drive, although I assume it would be, given the S and the current X have it.
I guess it's interesting it has a drive at all, like physical media continues.
Yeah, yeah. That's we didn't know whether or not it would have one, but now we do, which is, I don't know, I think it's positive. Yeah. If they want to keep the 4K Blu-ray as a selling point, at least, then they maybe the Xbox SAD or S All Digital Edition hasn't done particularly well. That was the version that took the drive out. So maybe they're just doubling back and being like, oh, well, you know, might as well. It's the high-end unit. It might as well have a drive. Yeah, I don't know. The controller, people seem to think, looks a tiny bit different. I mean, there's a share button now on the face. Not replacing any other button. It's just an extra button.
Right.
It's got that.
PlayStation style.
Yeah, because remember, that was the thing that originally that was a Kinect feature, wasn't it? You'd shout at it to say, hey, record that, and it would capture the last 30 seconds of video. Or,
yeah, no.
and then they made it a shortcut in the guide at some point, so you could get to it that way. So, yeah, this makes a bit more sense, I suppose, for people that are into that from their consoles. And also, like, there's apparently some contouring changes that to the controller that they have talked about, just in terms of like how it sits in the hand to make it slightly more comfortable for people of all hand sizes, like ergonomics.
Right, that's
they're
good.
Still looking at it, but as far as new features go,
I heard it's got
probably
the,
none.
I heard it's got the D-pad from the new Pro.
Yeah, so controller. It's not quite the same as the Elite D-pad.
Elite one, yeah.
It's like, if the Elite one has got, well, the Elite has several in the box that you can swap and change, but the default one for that is just that sort of concave grid-like panel, isn't it? Whereas this one is now a full circle, but the D-pad shape is raised within it. So it's a little different. It's pretty close. I'm interested to try out what those D-pads actually feel like, what the those big sort of concave things, like, they sort of make sense in my head, but I'd quite like, especially for fighting games and things like that, but I'd quite like to put my thumb on it before I make a decision there. So that's pretty much all we know about the Series X, other than we know about one more game for it. Which I'm hugely excited about, but like, it was kind of a surprise, I suppose, given that Ninja Theory are already working on Bleeding Edge. There it is, I remembered it.
Oh, you remembered that other game.
Just in time, yeah. We were talking about this before the cast, and I couldn't remember its name. But just did. Yeah, they're currently working on Bleeding Edge, so it's a bit of a surprise to see them also working on Senua's Saga Hellblade 2. And if that trailer is anything to go by, which they claim was entirely in-engine, holy hell. I mean, maybe that's...
Was that entirely in-engine?
That's so they say, yeah.
I did watch that. It looked like a cinematic.
I mean, yeah, but...
But yeah,
like
fair enough.
Some of those shots look ridiculous. Like,
I guess
it's
the next Xbox, so I guess.
Yeah. The shots that have me most confused are the ones where it's like just going over landscape, right? And it's like the sheer fidelity of the lighting, like, and how real that looks,
yeah,
is insane.
Okay, well,
there are some clues in some of the close-ups, like, of, you know, some depth of field stuff that perhaps makes it look like a render, you know, sort of on the when they're zooming in on the skull and bones and stuff on the floor and things like that, there's, you know, some hints there to show you that it's not that it might be in some sort of real time engine as opposed to a pre-rendered engine.
Yeah.
But, you know, they already proved that their motion capture is ridiculous in the first game. So I'm gonna stand and believe it. I'm believing it right now. Could cool. be a target render, but we're not sure. Digital Foundry did a little look at it as well to be like, oh, what have we got in here in terms of, like, is there some ray tracing going on in some places? It's not really the right sort of footage for that, but they theorized that some of the water reflection could be ray tracing.
Anyway, they've promised the hardware ray tracing, I presume.
They have, probably. Yes.
So it's fine.
I'm super excited about that. Although I'm a little bit confused about what it could be about, because the first one was felt like a somewhat contained experience.
Hmm.
And the story felt like a beginning and end. So what this is now, it's like, is Senua leading this mysterious tribe, or despite her problems, despite her psychosis and all this, and or maybe leading the whole tribe down a dark path? I don't know. Probably madness.
Guess we'll see.
Get hype. Go Ninja Theory. You go Ninja Theory. Good idea. Then the Game Awards also was happening. You know, this was announced at the Game Awards, which is a bit surprising. Everyone thought this would be like, oh, well, the general consensus, as far as I heard, it would be like, oh, they're probably going to do the March play like they always do in these sorts of timings. It's like March would be roughly around the time Microsoft would do a reveal, and then PlayStation would come out very soon afterwards with their details. And then they'd both come out in the holiday. That's just sort of the pattern of how this works now. But no, they've come out early a little bit to sort of say, yep, here we are. Here's what it is. So your move, PlayStation, I suppose. What else we got? Let's talk about that Ghost of Tsushima trailer. That's very pretty.
It's pretty. Talk about landscapes.
Yeah. Jeez. Lots of trees.
Yeah.
It's happy little trees.
I mean, is that like the last hurrah for the PlayStation 4, I guess?
I mean, probably. That's yeah.
Along with The Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah, they're both releasing pretty close to each other now. I think Last of Us is, what, May-ish? And this was announced as summer, so it'll be like maybe a few months afterwards.
They both look pretty great, but this looks, yeah, it looks good. I mean, it's hard to get a feel for the combat or whatever, because it's just a cinematic trailer.
Yeah. But
there's a bit of gameplay in there, clearly.
Yeah, I haven't shown a huge amount, but it does look, it looks great. I love the setting. I love the style they're going for.
Yeah.
It's a bit of me. It's very much a bit of me.
Our kind of thing.
Yeah.
Apart from possibly Dark Souls combat.
Yeah,
but it's probably going to be more God of War-like combat, isn't it? In that, like, Dark Souls light.
Yeah, and I would hope that way. But it might not. It might be brutal. It might be like one stab and you're nearly dead kind of thing.
Could be.
Because, you know, I mean, that original trailer they showed at E3 definitely had those grunts that just die if you do it right.
Yeah. Which is exciting in itself.
But I mean, that can be a Dark Souls thing too. There was a whole, even in the first Dark Souls, it was like you had the whole parry mechanic where you could, if you do it exactly right, you just do massive damage.
Yeah, excited about that still. Gears Tactics, they showed us some stuff from that. And I have to say, like, okay, we didn't get a super detailed glimpse, but it looks like it's like the story stuff at least seems to be done with a similar quality level as the main game.
Mm.
You know, it looked relatively well produced. And the tactics look like an XCOM-ass tactics game. And I think this might be one to watch. Just saying, it looks good. Yeah, I just want to say, I don't want to talk about Fortnite too much because obviously I don't play it and I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And it won the best ongoing game at the Game Awards. But the when Mr. I think his name is Mustard. That's his actual name. His like, surname Mr. Mustard. Is Mustard. Yeah. When he was on stage and he sort of said that there's like 1,000 people that work on that game now. Which I just sort of, my head was suddenly like, oh, does that mean there's like nearly $50 million worth of development going into this every year?
Mm.
How much money must they be getting back? Oh my word. So much money.
Fortnite's a mystery to me. I watched you play it that time. I was like, looks fine.
I mean,
looks good, but
I actually think Fortnite would be more fun take the building out, take that whole system out, and I think I'd have more fun with it.
But isn't that what people like?
I mean, every time I just hate how it, like, I don't know how you can play it, like, when it gets to the end game and people are just making these giant forts and they're constantly being destroyed and constantly being built and constantly in that transparent blue blueprint phase.
Yeah, it's always like, just like everything is half finished and you're constantly like jumping off and rebuilding and taking bits down. It's just like it's a big mess at the end game.
It's a huge mess. And I don't see, like, none of that is appealing to me at all. Like, it's just, and it must require such a finesse with the controls to build the exact thing at the exact point. And and don't get me wrong, like, the skill involved in doing that and actually still know what's going on must be immense. So all credit to those that can. I don't want to do that. I just kind of want to enjoy the world and shoot some fools. And like, all of that end game just is not appealing to me because it's just like, I'm never going
to
win this.
Well, you get to play PUBG then.
No, I play Apex.
Well, yeah, well, I guess. sort of similar.
I much prefer Apex. And that's. And Vin Diesel turned up to talk about a Fast and Furious game.
A bad Fast and Furious game, probably.
With Michelle Rodriguez.
Or, like, I guess, an incredibly average Fast and Furious game, as they always are.
I mean, yeah, it just. It might play all right, but the visual fidelity was pretty poor. Like, I was thinking in my head a little bit, it's like, oh, is this a mobile game? And it's like, in which case, that's an all right looking mobile game. But then, like, the title card came out and it was like PS4 and Xbox, and it's like, okay. Maybe didn't have the budget you were hoping for there. Or they're having
some reason.
Or they're having to rush it out the door before Fast 9 comes out.
Probably more likely.
Mm. Fast 9. And I think we could probably leave the news there.
Cool, yeah.
Unless something else happened. Like, Zach's got that face that he's got some surprise news that he hasn't talked about.
I think it's surprise news.
Surprise news!
We didn't have a chance to talk about Rocket League's thing, did we?
I suppose we haven't talked about Blueprints.
No.
Since that's gone live.
And also the fact that they've now changed it, I guess.
Wait. Again?
What do you mean again? Just that one time.
Okay, well, I don't. All right. Because I don't ever paid attention to it since it's like since it first went up, yeah. Right? And all the.
And then you realize you don't care even more than you did with crates.
Yeah, I care even less because the prices seem so huge.
But that was what got changed.
Yeah. Okay, so what has it changed to? Because I remember, like, what was it? Was it Black Market could set you back like 20 quid's worth of.
That's the
credits?
One that hasn't changed. It's pretty funny. Basically, they decided not to change just Black Market. So all the Black Market stuff still costs like 20 quid, essentially.
So if I still wanted that ice explosion that I don't have the blueprint for.
But then everything else, exotic and downwards, their prices got significantly cut to what you might always consider almost reasonable levels. Like, even just the shittiest tier of shit stuff that no one cares about, that's only like 50 credits now.
The thing is that without decryptors, you can't, in the Rocket Pass, earn enough credits to to cover both your Rocket Pass and unlock some stuff.
No, right? They got rid of the whole idea of decryptors. Like, you were hoping they were just going to give you a few extra credits,
yeah.
basically.
But yeah, then, yeah. then they like, have the free tier give you something as well as the paid tier.
I guess, but they don't want... I guess they don't want people to be able to save up enough credits to get into the Rocket Pass without ever paying, I guess.
I mean...
Because then you could still get even more.
But it would take a really long time, is the thing. Like, you wouldn't give enough away. Like, you'd pay maybe like,
yeah, but in order
a couple
to be able,
credits or something.
Well, sure, but even to be able to get enough to buy anything, you would have to give, like, a couple of hundred on the free tier, and that's only, like, 5 Rocket Passes away from getting into Rocket Pass for free.
I know, but they've only yes. had 5 Rocket Passes, and it's like, yeah, I don't know, it's a goodwill gesture for the players that are still playing, regardless.
They should have just...
Everyone paid at some point, right?
They should have just given... They should have just kept decryptors, but made them like tier specific decryptors, like a decryptor that can only unlock a rare.
Yeah, maybe. Something like that.
So, yeah, everyone was super pissed about the prices, and then everyone continued to be pissed because they didn't actually change Black Market, which is the only thing everyone cares about. Although it was also funny, they actually also. What you may have noticed if you looked at the blueprints is that, like, there's modifiers to the prices based on, like, stats tracking and colour and whatever.
Yeah.
But in the post where they changed the prices, they specifically called out that the white is, like, plus 100 credits, because obviously that's what everyone wants, and burnt sienna, shitty brown, is 0.
Oh, okay.
There's no modifier for brown. It's literally so bad that they're like, we can't even charge you more for that.
If you're down with a brown, your luck's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, it's good in the sense that it gets rid of the gambling aspect, but it's...
The prices are ridiculous.
The prices are nuts, and it just means I'll never engage with that system now.
No. Because you don't even get free stuff anymore.
Yeah. I'll stick to my Rocket Passes, thanks. Of which, Rocket Pass 5 seems like a fairly decent one in terms of the kit.
Yeah, so reasonable.
Yeah. So that's a thing. Is that news?
That's the news.
I guess.
Dan's decree.
It's not time for what you've been playing.
Well, I mean, technically.
I mean, it might be.
We played games at some point in the... At the past is generally what we're talking about.
What have you played?
Yeah.
Open question.
So what are we going to do? What do you want to talk about for this now that we're free of the restrictions of our podcasting format?
Well, basically, we have exactly no idea. Thing. So we've all come up with our own shit and we're just going to start talking about stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to talk about finishing Out of Worlds. No.
Save that until after the game.
Actually, I've got a huge amount to say, so it's like, sure. It can wait. It can wait. All right, go on then, Zach. Kick us off.
Yeah, kick us off, Zeg.
Well, I came
you
up...
You seem most prepared.
Yeah, I made notes and shit.
Nice.
Like, well, so originally, just in case, originally one of our early ideas of what we were even going to talk about for the special episode was just like... our favorite games ever, even though we all realized very quickly that that would be a real boring list because it's all the same things that we always talk about on the podcast, essentially.
Yeah. The same topics that we bring up because they're our favorite games, so we're bound to bring them up.
I can only talk about Panzer Dragoon Auto on so many more episodes before I get some kind of dragon slap.
I don't mind talking about Panzer Dragoon Auto.
So initially I just made a list of like random games that I like. Not just, I mean, so I'm just going to go through these by name, not going to talk about these, basically, probably. I might mention the thing.
Games of your youth.
But, like, so from the top, I was just like, okay, Rocket League, Breath of the Wild, TF2, Factorio, get them out of the way. Don't need
Rocket
to talk about
League,
them at all.
Breath of the Wild, TF2, and Factorio. Are they your top games? Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm not going to rank those.
No,
too
you
difficult
have to.
Top four.
Yeah, but, let's rank those.
Well... You can split them into multiplayer with Rocket League and TF2.
Yeah, the classic technique.
Yeah, and then the single player experience of
but then, Breath of the Wild then I moved, Factorio. Then I moved into like, okay, now there's a couple of ones that are like series that I couldn't pick a specific game out of, like Smash. and Advance Wars.
Mm, yeah.
And Golden Sun. Not that's much of a series. And XCOM. Also not much of a series.
You can't really... Do you think the original XCOM is like that? I mean, I guess they're all
the original
good,
XCOM is... I mean, is the original, I mean.
Yeah.
Is pretty great.
Yeah, but...
Bloody esoteric, but it's pretty good.
I think you could pick between that and Enemy Unknown. You know,
that's what I was talking about, though.
That's what, they're different enough that you could...
It's all about Terror from the Deep. What are you talking about? Anyway, sorry.
No, it's not. Terror from the Deep was even more ridiculous than the original game was.
Okay, fine.
And then beyond that, I was just like, okay, let's just go through a few other ones. Dwarf Fortress, FDL, Subnautica, Into the Breach, KSB, Space Game, Terraria, Super Meat Boy, Planet Coaster, Rogue Legacy, Transistor, Alpha Centauri.
You go too fast, man.
Yeah, well, those are the ones I'm not going to talk about. It. That's the point.
Okay.
Rogue Lister? What was that?
Rogue Legacy.
Oh, and Resistor.
And right. Transistor.
Transistor, yeah.
Do you really like Transistor that much?
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, you had multiple playthroughs.
Yeah, I finished that game real good.
I finished the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Is it that much better than Bastion, I guess?
Well, I didn't play Bastion, so I mean, that's why this is my list, obviously.
Oh, I see, okay.
It's your Supergiant game,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And
I wonder if that's a trick. The first Supergiant game you play is your Supergiant game.
Maybe. So, yeah. I mean, so obviously that list of games is obviously all great, but then the ones that I actually came up with shit to talk about, I then started getting into making up weird categories for them.
Okay.
So the best audio thing.
Yeah. The first category I came up with was games that need a sequel, but not that one. Games that need a sequel, but not the sequel they actually made.
That they actually made. Oh, right.
That's brilliant. I like that.
So the first one on this list is obviously Battlefield 2142.
Right.
Not that I'm saying Battlefield 3 and 4 weren't good.
Yeah, they haven't strictly made a... I would argue, yeah, they haven't actually made a sequel to 2142.
No,
I feel like the closest you're going to get is Titanfall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still not quite the same.
It's not
thing.
Battlefield.
Yeah.
Because, goddammit, 2142 was like probably the best Battlefield.
It was one of the best. Out of all the Battlefields, it felt the most balanced a lot. Like,
and
weapon variety was really interesting.
Yeah, it was like balanced and also had weapon variety.
Yeah.
Each team actually had a full set of distinct weapons that were balanced and then all the unlocks.
I think people just remember the mode with the big motherships and don't concentrate. The Titan mode.
Yeah, which Titan. Had problems because the tech wasn't quite there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. The servers had to be set to Titans cannot move, or otherwise it just got real fucked up.
Yeah. Which is a shame, because it's an interesting idea, and of course, although it had the problem that a lot of Battlefield games do, that Titan maps, because the Titans were always the same shape, like, you could end up with a fight in the same area on the Titan every game.
And, like, it wasn't even a very interesting fight in the Titan, usually.
It's
it
a corridor.
Like a hella corridor.
Yeah.
So,
it's like,
so
it doesn't matter how amazing and epic the map is if you're just fighting in the same corridor every time.
Yeah, so it had issues like that. I mean, it could have been, like, mitigated by having different Titan designs or, like, for each level.
Titans could have just been bigger and that might have helped. More corridors.
I wouldn't say bigger, just maybe a more intricate, interesting design. Less long corridors.
Well, certainly. The less really obvious checkpoints.
And I wouldn't even say Battlefield 3 was a bad sequel. In fairness, it's probably my favourite of the modern Battlefields.
Yep.
And it's just been downhill since then. Although 1 was okay. But it didn't quite... we probably played that more. Maybe.
I don't know. Like, it must have been pretty close to being at least as long.
Battlefield 2 did have the squad stuff, but did 2142? Didn't the spawning on the squad, was that better in 2142? I can't remember.
2142 had more options because it had spawn beacons.
Yeah,
as well as spawning on people.
The beacons were hilarious.
Yeah. Did they get rid of that later, spawn beacons? Or
put them on double buildings.
Well, the trouble was that they kept the spawn beacons in like Battlefield 3, but now it's just a weird radio antenna that you just spawn at.
Right, that doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah.
Because you actually dropped, didn't you?
Yeah, you literally dropped, and that was sort of a balance thing, because you could see the pods coming down, so you knew where the spawn beacons were. It's like, that kind of helped balance it.
Man. Yeah, and the more I think about that game, the more cool it was. I wish the mechs were slightly more entertaining to fight when you're on foot, though.
Because they were directly under them and shooting the vent.
Yeah, but they were still really hard.
Hilarious.
They were still crazy hard.
Yes.
Like, you know, Battlefield, that's normally where I think Battlefield gets its balance slightly wrong, is like, I don't know.
On foot versus vehicles.
Yeah, because if, like, you have to be the right class on foot to have any, to be able to do anything against a vehicle.
Yeah.
Whereas a vehicle actually going up against the right class of infantry can be a pain in the ass. Like, it never feels... I mean, that's how it's supposed to feel, but it's irritating in both directions.
That was kind of another one of the things that was quite well balanced about 2142, is they actually did a reasonably good job of, even on the more open map, still putting like infantry zones in, where it's just like, you really get a vehicle into it.
And even in some places, the fixed turrets were viable.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a very well-made thing that just kind of, I wouldn't say flew totally under the radar, but it just didn't hit the popularity.
Which was weird, because like at the time, I guess it was slightly before everyone really started being like, no more fucking World War II, goddamn.
Yeah.
but like, for the first one of that sort of age of that, people didn't care very much for some reason.
It had a weird, I want to say it had a weird Starship Troopers aesthetic about it as well.
A little bit.
Sort of like,
but not in a comedy way, obviously.
Not in a comedy way. Not in a future cool way. Kind of in a future
real.
This might actually
like
be
a real
it,
future.
Yeah, yeah, this might actually be how it pans out, kind of way. Like chunky stuff, chunky military looking stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than
and climate
neons.
Change also
and climate change. Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Because it's like if you like, I guess they kind of still kept that in Battlefield 4, kind of, their weird weather, everything's fucked.
Oh, sure.
The climate change angle.
The levolution.
Yes. But, like, if they just made a 2142 or 2143 instead of Battlefield 4, like, the Battlefield 4 tech with 2142's world, that would have been great.
Was it one of the PGA Tour games that let you play on that Battlefield 4?
Yeah, it was the whatever Tiger Woods game came out around that time. They had the weird, like the one hole of a course that was playing off the deck of that destroyed aircraft carrier onto that island. It was funny. Crossovers. So anyway, that was 2142. A better sequel than most of the other sequels of Battlefield games that came afterwards.
That's a heck of a thing. I mean,
do you remember the in-game advertisements on that?
Yeah.
Lots of Intel ads. It was always Intel, right? I don't think I saw anything else.
Because they only probably sold like one set of those ads.
I've never been actually against the idea of like having adverts.
When it makes sense.
Yeah, in games like
even
that.
Even though it kind of doesn't really make sense in the near future. But, you know, make excuses.
Well, have your, like, if you're going to do that in a game and it's popular enough that you can, I think this might be the thing. You'll have to add it late after the fact, right? Which is going to annoy your player base, probably.
Yeah.
But if you do that and your game's popular enough that your marketing team could, you know, in-worldify the graphics of the ads a little.
What, you mean like they did for fucking Fifth Element?
A little bit, yeah.
Whatever that game's called. New York race.
New York race, yeah.
Weird future Rolexes.
And cars.
Then cars.
Then maybe that would be totally acceptable.
Maybe.
A bit more pressure on your art team.
Yeah, that's quite a lot of effort.
I don't know, is it? Like, if it's just a billboard.
Yeah, but you have to invent a concept for a future version of the product you're trying to advertise. It's not just like you're just making a weird bit of art.
Maybe you don't have to do it for future products necessarily, but you could like
future company logos,
or slightly stylize the ad so it fits into the world.
I'm sure, that wouldn't be a very worthwhile ad to the people you're trying to sell it to.
No, right? Maybe not. Maybe that's the problem. But I don't know. If it was an EA game and they tried to advertise other EA games in a weird way, I'd be totally okay with that.
So anyway,
that sometimes happens, right? You sometimes like, was it Apex or something that had like some of its billboards would occasionally show ads for something else?
But I mean, that makes sense.
I'm sure I've seen like things like that where it's just been like, well, I suppose Rocket League does it occasionally, but usually for its own events.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've like been in a game and there's just been a huge billboard that's been advertising some esports competition for a different game.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So the second one on this list, slightly less enthusiasm about it, maybe, is Monday Night Combat, obviously.
Oh boy, yes.
Because don't want the sequel they made for that.
No, I mean, I dabbled in Super Monday Night Combat, and it was, it's not the same game.
No.
But it wasn't, for, you know, for a shooter-ish MOBA, it was all right.
But the first one was a better shooter-ish MOBA.
This is true.
That was, I mean, again, I would say the same thing about 2042 in some ways, but like for a weird off-spin shooter thing, they somehow created a fairly good world, and the Monday Night Combat world is weirdly funny in its construction. Slightly. Like the whole idea of like your, what in Call of Duty is like perks, are your corporate sponsorships, and they give you little buffs.
Yeah.
Like that was great.
That system was really good. And the fact that it's just like sponsored hot dogs and churros about the place.
And everything is like, you know, you get the juice, and then that the money ball guy comes out and you shoot shit out of him.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was a funny little like weird corporate deathmatch world. And the
weird
they created.
The weird chicken?
Yeah.
What's the chicken about?
That came later with that like the one DLC map they did.
Yeah. I can't remember what the chicken was about.
Well, you still shot him and money came out. It was basically the same as
it's just a chicken.
But then you get the juice, and then you shoot the guys. And it had the cool but also weird system where taunts actually mattered. Like, if you taunted after you kill someone, you get more cash.
Yeah.
Which kind of takes away from the point of it being a taunt, but also, you know.
It was funny. Cool. Yeah, and it gave you a reason to use them in fight rather than just...
And, like, it then made it like a risk versus reward.
Yeah.
Like, you lock yourself into this taunt animation, but you're going to get more cash.
Whereas most, like... I don't know, the closest thing you can get is like a finisher, right? And I think Apex has finishers and stuff like that. But they are just there to be cool. You don't gain from them.
Mm.
And it's like, I think Monday Night Combat had some really fantastic ideas. I think where it fell down a little bit on the, I mean, I guess this is, I don't know how else they would have done it, but it's like when the Moneyball shield came down and all you're really doing is firing at it.
There was really only Dota around before this, of course, because this is hella old, but like that is just like the MOBA problem, isn't it? Like the towers and the thing at the end that you have to blow up.
Mm.
But by the time you're blowing the thing up at the end, you've basically already won. It's very rare that there's ever any kind of actual comebacks at that point. So there's the same problem with the money ball. Once the shield goes down, you'll just stand there and shoot it for a minute or two. It's not really anything that either side can do at that point.
Mm.
So yeah, that's Monday Night Combat.
No, it's just so good. I mean, the class makeup was
also
brilliantly balanced.
Yep, it's pretty great for a TF2-esque setup.
It was one of the few games where I really didn't mind playing as the stealth class either.
I never got the hang of it, but
like, I wasn't good, but it was still kind of enjoyable, right? And that happens to me so rarely.
Because I just played Engineer, that Italian guy. Italian for some reason, of course, because that's what you do with random character archetypes.
I can't remember who I played the most of there. It's probably just the regular guy, you know, the normal assault dude.
Yeah, the assault grenade launcher dude.
Yeah.
Who was kind of like the demo.
But I think I played as the heavy quite a lot, you know, the guy in the mech suit.
Hawaiian. I'm pretty sure he was a wide, right?
I don't know. I can't. I remember not as much of that game as I should. And you can't really play it now unless you set up a LAN.
Mm. You could play the wave defense mode.
Oh, yeah, they added that, didn't they?
That's Monday Night Combat.
I might do that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. We should make a video.
Yeah, just remind myself what it looks like.
Next on this list for games that should have a sequel but not the one they made, SimCity 4.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
because City Skylines is good, but it just doesn't feel as well made as a Maxis SimCity game. I don't know why. It's just like, it just doesn't feel as well polished and like high quality as the Maxis SimCity games used to.
SimCity 4 is crazy. How did they make that at the time? Just, I mean, it's so detailed and I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's all like bitmaps or whatever, isn't it?
I know.
But they got around the problem of mid 3D graphics by
not doing
skipping
it.
Skipping that.
Yeah. But still, the simulation is not bad in 4. It's okay.
Yeah, for being almost entirely estimated and statistical,
yeah.
The thing still they tried to get away from.
That's the way to do it, though.
Yeah. I guess. Like, I really appreciated what they tried to do with modern SimCity, like having...
But City Skylines still does that better, just like...
I mean, it uses it in the places where it makes more sense, right? And then uses stats for the rest of it. It's kind of a hybrid of the two models.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I guess kind of. And obviously the thing about City Skylines is, like, at a certain point, stuff does just disappear. Like, traffic, if your traffic sits still for too long, it just starts vanishing. And it's like, oh, those people didn't get where they go, so they get, like, a negative bonus to happiness or whatever. It doesn't actually truly simulate the whole...
Right, I suppose that is some way of mitigating... Like, it's blocked forever, basically. Like,
yeah, because, I mean, theoretically, you could just have a gridlock that you would be impossible to get out of because you can't actually do anything about
it. And then maybe in itself, that's kind of a thing, like, where you could potentially do something about
it. Well, that's why there's mods.
Yeah.
You can turn on traffic doesn't disappear and then get real screwed.
Yeah, but then, like, yeah, then it's up to you to actually be like, okay, how do I fix this problem? How do I direct the traffic out of the issue? Yeah.
And that's why there's all those traffic mods for Skylines as well, with all their little lane assigning and whatnot.
And it could be a thing, but I could also see it becoming busy work.
I mean, it was a balance in SimCity 5 between like the detail of the simulation and still being a game.
Mm.
But then they hamstrung themselves so badly with the detail of the simulation fucking up the size of the map that it just like it turned into barely a game.
Right. Yeah.
And it did have some good ideas, like the modular buildings was a fucking genius idea.
Talk to me about the modular buildings.
With the idea that you could just place like a base fire station for cheap and then like add extra fire engine bays or extra like radio towers or whatever onto it later.
That's
to improve its usefulness.
Except though that sort of system can be mildly annoying because of like having to demolish space around it.
Yeah, but that was the whole point. You didn't have to for some of the upgrades. Obviously some of them you did still have to sort of account for the future space, like extra fire engine bays or whatever, but you could make a better version of that system that did like. Because really, you could easily do it where the lowest tier of fire station just has like a big garden around it, like an empty lot around it, essentially. You like reserve the space ahead of time for the future upgrades.
True.
It was a good idea. It just was in a not great game.
Like I said, yeah, I don't think many of the ideas in that game were actually bad.
No.
They just didn't execute.
No. And then Maxis died.
And then Maxis died as a result, which is super sad, really.
Yep. And speaking of...
But then all those devs went off and did like other things, and that's why we've sort of ended up with the indie management revival, in a way.
I guess.
Like, SimCity's demise might be why we've got games like... Well, it's almost certainly why we've got Skylines. And
that wasn't anything to do with Maxis, though. That was just like... They capitalized on the demise of Maxis.
They did, but that's why it stuck around and why it's still a thing.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know, Two Point Hospital, right? And those sorts of things. It's like they might not have come about without the demise of Maxis. It's a weird state to be in.
Mm. And then the last one for this segment, Paper Mario.
What? Like Super Paper Thousand. Mario? Oh no, Paper no, Mario Thousand exactly. Year Door.
Anything after the second one, forget all those. Make a better sequel.
Did anyone play the first one?
I haven't, no.
I played a part of it, but I never got... The trouble is, because it's an N64 game, it's quite jank.
I don't think... Yeah, sure. Thousand Year Door is not going to be repeated, is it?
No, yeah. It's a flash in the pan.
It should be. Especially now that Marin Luigi is fucking dead as well because of Alpha Dream dying.
There's a huge gap now in that style of game, and the thing is I don't know if there's really a okay. It works because it's Mario primarily, right? If someone else tried to sneak in on the Papercraft RPG, then but it wasn't tied to the fact that it was Mario, right? It works because it's a twist on something really well known. You couldn't just like come out with a brand new IP that was that now, right? And it be as good. Because most of the game's humor was a play on Mario.
Well,
yeah.
I guess. Although I don't know if it was necessarily that much of a direct play on Mario.
Remember those birds in the trees who were like,
yes.
What, joking about wireless networking or something?
Fat pipes,
yeah.
But it wasn't really a direct joke on Mario. It was just like, everything about the entire game was suddenly not a Mario universe.
Yeah.
Like, why is this town all shitty and run down and has a noose in the town center and and the mafia? And it's just like, it wasn't like super specific jokes about Mario things. I mean, I guess fucking Bowser was kind of the one big like joke about the Mario universe, as he often is, where it's just
it
like,
was pretty
he's
weird
not the actual
having
villain.
The Princess Peach sections were quite strange. Like, the implication of what was going on with Princess Peach was quite weird.
I mean, it made sense that she actually would try and do something for a change. I mean, that was the subversion, the more broad subversion of like, Princess Peach actually does anything at all.
Yeah, that's true.
She has a plan of some kind. So yeah, I mean, like, now that Mario and Luigi is fucked, we can have a Paper Mario RPG again, right? Because that was
good.
The whole reason that they stopped doing them like that, they said, where it's like, we don't want two Mario RPGs, so we'll have just keep Mario and Luigi and Paper Mario can become all these other weird crap, like card-based battle, whatever the fuck they did. But now Mario and Luigi's gone, back to RPGs, surely. We can only hope.
That's probably one of the best, like, light RPGs.
Yeah.
I mean, probably better than Pokemon, like, to be fair. I
mean, nice mechanics, like, the stylish thing was cool.
Yeah.
Like, the whole mechanic of the crowd was just like, that's an ingenious idea.
Yeah. Was that new, or was that from Mario and Luigi?
I think that was actually new. I think in Paper Mario 1, you just get generic battle scenes. I think. I don't really remember it that well, the little bit of that I did play. But yeah.
Remember the like Yoshi in the fighting tournament? Not Yoshi. What was his name?
Which one? The main
you got
boss
different colours, didn't you?
Well, the Yoshi that you had.
Yeah. And you meet him at the like wrestling.
Yes, at the wrestling tournament.
Yeah.
Hilarious. And the colours were like based on what name you gave him.
That's
for some
right.
reason.
Yeah.
Weird. But yeah. Rob has apparently had to go take a phone call, which is why he's not saying anything right now.
I see. Yeah, agreed.
So anyway, that's the end of that first section. Of games that
deserve proper sequels and got sequels, but not the ones we wanted.
Yep. So that's the end of that. So now we've got
Deus Ex. Sorry.
Kind of, yeah. So now we've got the section that I've just called Mechanics That Were Great. Like, games that had cool mechanics that, like, didn't really get enough play after the game they were in, I don't think.
Although copy
maybe,
this,
you know, maybe I didn't play old games ever. So the first one on this list was World in Conflict, basically.
Right.
How World in Conflict did RTSs.
Its requisition systems.
Yeah, the reinforcement points and tactical aid. And getting rid of base building in an RTS. It's
did
like,
that come from Ground Control? Or was it
probably
brand new?
Probably. I mean, it's probably based on some of those ideas.
Yeah, I don't know if I've never played Ground Control, so I don't...
I think I did once. But as a like a full like top-down RTS style, I'm not sure it had done that way before.
Hmm.
Oh, and there was those... It must have been before. They did those, like, Warhammer games.
The Relic Warhammer games.
Yeah, the Relic early Relic Warhammer games. They had sort of a similar... They still had a little bit of base building, though, I think.
Dawn of War and Dawn of War 2. Yeah, they had...
They're pretty good. They did have base building.
Company of Heroes as well.
Yeah, Company of Heroes is more that way. Like, although it gets base building eventually, but not for quite a long time in the campaign. It doesn't have the same mechanics as... World in Conflict, that's for sure.
But yeah, the World in Conflict. And also, I mean,
it made it for a really interesting multiplayer, right?
Yeah, like, that was its big advantage, was like, make multiplayer sort of bearable, I guess, in an RTS.
Because I loved you could actually just focus down on what your squad was up to, right? Because your squad wouldn't be huge.
Yeah, well, you're limited by how many units you could have.
Yeah, it could be a reasonable size, because you might still be like splitting your ground and air troops, but you were rolled, right? So I'm the Air Force guy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be trying to move my choppers where it makes sense, or I'm the tank guy, or I'm the sneaky infantry guy.
Yeah.
And so it made sense to fill the roles and to... Man, it was a... Yeah, that was a smart ass game.
And also less of the mechanics, but just like the whole tactical aid system, which was a mechanic, but also real cool. It was a great idea for just like an RTS game where... I mean... arguably, you could just say this whole game is just another MOBA. You're like managing the lane of units, and then you're getting your skills that you just hit every few seconds.
I mean, sort of, yeah. It doesn't have the creep, but the skills that you got every few seconds, it's like that was a currency, right? The tactical aid. So, like, you could pop a nuke if you wanted to.
Eventually.
Yeah.
The nukes were, the nukes were just cool, but, like, that was their thing. It was just like they were just cool. They were so completely useless and, like, way too expensive to actually be worthwhile saving up that many tactical aid points. Mm. But it was basically just a taunt.
Yeah.
You were like, we're winning this so much, I'm going to launch a nuke. Because I don't even need these tactical aid points for real, actual use.
And it would mess up an area of the map for a while.
Not for very long, though. Not as long as you'd hope for as much money as you spend on that. But yeah, the whole tactical aid system. And also, I mean, the way each type of unit had two skills, like an offense skill and a defense skill, that was put on like Q and E on your keyboard. So you can, as you selected different units, you had all those little different options, mostly just smoke on defense, obviously, but the offensive ones were kind of interesting. The one that I exploited using medium anti-air that could, for a short period, shoot at ground, because that always surprised people.
Oh, yeah.
Fight them right up.
Or constant shouting of the word heat.
Yep, heat of heavy tanks. So yeah, that was a pretty cool RTS game mechanic.
I mean, they had a pretty great campaign as well. The whole everything actually did go wrong, like midpoint of the game is kind of neat.
The flashback was maybe a bit much,
but
I mean, it gave you an opportunity to do some slightly different things, have some different units in front.
Mm.
So then the next on the list of cool mechanics that people should have done more stuff was Left 4 Dead. The whole concept of the director. Not enough games have really done that concept again.
No.
And my example that I thought of that would have been fucking amazing is you take the whole concept of the director and like having a level that like shunts you down different routes and spawns different enemies, put that in Titanfall. Have you be like a group of pilots who has to go and do an objective, but it's like a randomly set up route and the grunts spawn differently every time, and like maybe an enemy Titan shows up like a tank would in Left 4 Dead or whatever. Just put that in Titanfall. That would have been fucking amazing.
I mean, that's sort of what the horde modes in those games sort of are to some extent. You can't, they randomize the way you're coming at you.
Sure, but it's still a horde, like a defensive thing, not really like a moving forwards.
Yeah.
The director was a cool idea, but like, I feel like that could have had more games based on that whole system.
They've tried to. It's not really director related. This is a slightly different offshoot. I haven't played it yet, but there's something objective-y in Apex now.
Hmm.
In Apex Legends, like there's an objective you can do to win, as well as on. I think you might have to turn it on in one of the modes or something, but. Like, yeah, you can do the objective instead of being first to win or last remaining, which is kind of interesting.
Kind of. Although that might be weird with the ring or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly know little about it. I just noticed it on screen when they were doing Mirage's Hollow Day thing at the Game Awards, and it's just like, oh, maybe some of this objective-based stuff is coming back.
Hmm.
Maybe. But still, yeah, not the director. The director's really... Or just more randomized elements about not just the enemies that spawn, but the environment itself.
Yeah.
That should totally be more of a thing. Like, because what's the closest thing we get? It's procedurally generated dungeons in...
Like Diablo-esque games, maybe.
Or Enter the Gungeon, or Isaac, or Rogue Legacy to some degree. You know, it's like, in it, but it's... Not quite the same, is it? There's something about how the director did it that was, and admittedly, that was probably better in the first game than in the second, actually, because the second game I felt like they just ramped up things like the horde and stuff like that. You know, when those occurred, to the point where it was just like
a little too much,
yeah,
a little too constant,
yeah. You could be like, or you could became a bit predictable, right? It would be like, okay, it's been far too long; it's going to happen any second now. Oh, there it is.
Well, it wasn't always kind of predictable, but like, I feel like they definitely let you go a bit longer without anything happening in Left 4 Dead 1.
Yeah,
where you could just like wander around and look for crap. pick up the med kits or whatever.
Yeah, and still, you know, feel like you're... The Horde felt like an event, as opposed to... It felt like more of an event, as opposed to just being the thing you deal with.
And also, maybe in Left 4 Dead 2, it was like they had a lot more instances of just, like, generic pressure on everything in the level. Like, the hurricane and whatnot, and like there's that bit where you set off the alarms and you have to run through the fence maze on the decontamination site.
There's
a lot more instances of that where it's just like more intense, rather than in Left 4 Dead where it's just like the intensity just sort of happened naturally from the hordes occurring and like then the occasional special all the tank.
Yeah, I kind of want it to. The thing I think I wanted from those games that never really occurred, I mean, it occurred a little bit in the early days of the first game, is unwittingly making mistakes, right? I want players to be able to...
That's a very difficult thing, though.
Yeah.
You only get that once.
It's super hard. But you learn. The director has the ability to put things in specific ways that it's really hard to see them or something, or then you do a thing and it like makes it worse. And it's like, okay, the cars were kind of in that direction, right, to some degree, where setting off a car alarm would trigger the whole problem. Yeah. I kind of want more of those, more accidents, right? Well, the accidents are what make that interesting.
What if you went, like, super hardcore? I don't know if it would be, like, that great, because it might actually start pissing people off, but what if you went all the way with the director where, like, make it so that it would be possible for... when it shunts you down a different route, make it so you can go partially down that route, and then it just blocks it entirely off, and you have to backtrack.
Oh, brutal! Yeah,
make it like so. Even if you know the level, it's a chance that you think you're going down one route, but you're totally not, because you're then going to have to go all the way back.
Or, all right, this could be wild. What if the game was built a bit like Outrun, and that it's just one map? But the route can split in like a billion different ways.
That's difficult to constrain a level, though, is sort of the problem with that when you're in first person.
Well, it could be a level with a level with multiple exits, right? And then but the different exits take you to different next stages. So instead of having like the campaigns, it's like you'll go through about four or five levels. But because they're branching all the time.
Yeah, but now you're getting into like COD zombies almost, where like you have to do very specific things to go a very specific route.
Maybe, but the director could pick, is what I mean.
Yeah, I guess.
It's like, so what you could, there might be routes that you may not see for a really long time, or there might be like just a super rare secret thing that could happen occasionally, like a stupid reload in Battlefield Hardline. You know, I kind of want it to be able to surprise you more.
Yeah. Surprise is difficult.
And let's not forget, there is one of these in development right now.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
So they keep saying.
Not a Left 4 Dead, though. I forget what it's called. It's like it's a bad name, but it's got a 4 in it.
Yes.
Not as good as a Left 4 Dead. That's a great name. But, yeah. Nope, can't remember.
And I know I keep saying it, like, every time I think about Left 4 Dead, it's just like, I want to go play it, but you just can't. It's not possible to get 4 people together in a game any longer. And playing at randoms is only...
No, playing with randoms didn't work at all.
Not that great.
No.
Sometimes it's okay, but not that often.
No, that was no fun to me, having a rando in the game.
And then the last one for mechanics that were great that should have been used more. Except this one isn't really true, I guess, is the destruction in Red Faction Guerrilla. Basing a game around the destruction was really the sort of, because it's not like there hasn't been destructible scenery in lots of other games since then. Like you just look at a video of Battlefield 5 and you'll see all those houses getting fucked up and all that stuff. But like making it the whole game mechanic was kind of the trick to Red Faction Guerrilla somehow.
Yeah, this who cares attitude. Kind of. I mean,
could you get creative with it particularly, or a bit?
Well, the trouble with it in Guerrilla was like the different ways to destroy buildings kind of unlocked too far apart, I guess. Because you did a lot of work with the clip-on mine things, whatever those were called.
I guess Just Cause is like the closest, right?
Yeah, Just Cause is kind of the same, but like...
It's not about the destruction primarily, is it? I mean, you've got the red stuff to destroy, but...
But they're all just like a thing you shoot and then it blows up. It's not like you have to actually take down this building in a specific way. That was the trick, the Red Faction, I guess.
Or that it's mildly awkward to take them down. I mean, yeah, Red Faction, you could be in a situation where it's like, ah, I haven't actually got any explosives right now. I've got my hammer still.
Yep.
So
just start working.
I could mush through this wall, and then I could get inside and do the thing I needed to do in there, and hope there's some explosives inside. And yeah, there was. I mean, it gave you the tools to just tackle most things in lots of different. Because I suppose Gorilla had the slight problem that you'd often be in the same area quite a lot.
Well, and right. Everything was quite similar until quite late in the game.
Yeah.
Once you got to the high class area.
It was a little bit cookie cutter in places. Yeah. Right? But it sort of meant that it's like, oh, hey, I've got different equipment right now compared to what you did
but
last
not enough
time.
Different equipment. That was kind of the trouble. Mm. Like, it took so long after you get the debt charges right at the start. And then, like, the next thing that really takes down buildings is, like, the nano rifle. And that's practically the end of the game.
Mm.
Or the thermobaric rockets, but that's way too expensive to be firing those around all over the place.
But that's why they put the destruction mode in.
Well, yeah, it's a different game mode.
Yeah, just let you run riot with the ridiculous guns. Or was it? Didn't they have like you had an ammo limit, like a really?
Yeah, they did. There was different versions of that destruction game mode where it's just like a time limit or like a very limited pool of ammo that you had to use to cause as much damage as possible.
Mm.
It was pretty cool. But then, like, now destructive scenery is just for cosmetics, mostly. Not actually game mechanic any longer. It's just sort of expected, I guess.
I mean, Crackdown tried.
Kind of.
And mostly failed.
And then the last category I came up with, which is a much shorter one, is just games that you wish you could play for the first time again, which is basically all the puzzle games.
Breath of the Wild.
Just The Witness, Antichamber, Infinite Factory, and Fez. It's just like pretty much all of those. Like amazing puzzle stuff, but it's just like you can't go back.
Oh, I see.
Maybe you sort of can for Antichamber, because that's like weird enough that it's still. Because the puzzles in that aren't so much like set. It's not like The Witness where it's like a set puzzle. Antichamber is a more environmental thing. And it's sort of easier to forget parts of it.
There's a certain element. Like, I can't say I remember all of the mechanics in The Witness anymore.
I'm sure you would, though, as soon as you started playing it.
Maybe.
Like, you'd look at the screen, you'd see the symbol, you'd be like, oh yeah, I remember what I have to do, even if I don't remember the solution to this puzzle. But that
or
gets me quite a lot of the way there.
Or at the very least, you'd hopefully stumble upon the clue. Well, that's what you're supposed to do, right?
I guess that is sort of the other thing that would help if going back to The Witness is like you're never going to forget how that game functions in general, sort of thing. Like, if you find the tutorial at the start of an area that tells you that leads you into how that puzzle mechanic works, then you learn what that symbol means. Like, you're not going to forget that. Even if you forget a specific mechanic, you're still going to know to look for that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're never going to have the Witness's Eureka moment.
Well, no, again. You're not going to have the cool environmental puzzle scene.
That, I mean, yeah.
Although, possibly, that might... Arguably, you could say that The Witness has basically boned that for every game ever.
I mean, maybe,
You're never going to be surprised by something like that again, because you'll kind of be, like... As soon as there's any hint of a certain shape, you'll be like, oh, wait.
It's sort of a shame that The Witness... outside of its secret ending doesn't do more with kind of what the secret ending implies, right? That eventually everything is a puzzle.
Yeah.
It's a sort of a shame that it doesn't roll with that a little bit more, and that it is just that secret ending that plays with that a little bit. It's like, I'm seeing it everywhere.
Is it everything? Yeah. I don't know. And then Fez, obviously.
Man, so I'm angry at the world about Fez.
And we only got like partially spoiled on Fez even.
I mean, we did pretty good. I mean, we came at it late.
Yeah.
But there was only very few details that we knew going into it. And wow, what a ridiculously great experience that is to try and figure that stuff out. But man, I'm bummed about it now, because it's like there were going to be more Fez.
this goes back to the first category of games that should have had a sequel, except this one didn't have a sequel.
This one didn't, yeah, because of the community and the creator not getting on. I forget exactly what the circumstances were. I think there were asshats on both sides of this, but it caused him, the creator of Fez, to effectively bail from video games completely.
I don't know if it was necessarily...
Because it just did him so much stress.
Yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily, like, a specific thing that happened. I think it was just, like, a build-up over time of, like... Because, I mean, it's like every goddamn internet community eventually will just build up that kind of pressure after a certain period of time.
I mean, there must have been that pressure before Fez even came out, because we knew about it a long time before it came out.
It is kind of... It's sort of an unknown at that point, though. And that's sort of an internal pressure. It's like when they did that documentary about Meat Boy or whatever.
Mm.
And it was like, it's an internal pressure at that point. Because you're like, people don't know that this game is going to be fucking amazing or whatever.
Yeah, because that documentary was before Fez came out, right? And it was following his convention pressure.
Yeah.
And like the ability, you know, the last minute build for PAX or something, and it didn't work. Yeah. It was crashing on the stand, and it's like, and how much that...
That's a more internal pressure rather than an external pressure of like wanting a sequel and various other things pissing people off about things about.
I mean, there was only like, what, other than Disaster Piece, there were, I think him and his co-programmer fell out at one point as well.
I think so.
It didn't happen because they had to design their whole game engine from scratch.
Which is why it then took ages to port as well, which is one of the things that the community gradually got more annoyed about.
Yeah. But hey, what a ridiculous game that is. That is up there, like in my pantheon of games. It's like it's a ridiculously good thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favourite soundtracks to a video game ever.
Yep. It's great.
Like Disaster Piece is just amazing.
I probably will eventually play Fez again, even though I remember a lot of it. Because
That's the problem.
Well, I have it on my Steam.
I mean, we could
it's like I actually have it. I guess
we should do a video of that, well, like first hour or something like that.
Maybe
just do the whole thing. It's been long enough.
Maybe. Just go for it.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I mentioned was Infinifactory, but that's like, it's slightly different from Infinifactory because of when I played it. Because I played it in the early access that's not really early access because that's what he does with his games. But it's like, they go into early access, but they're basically done. Mm. It's more like a real early access, like an actual beta or whatever. Actually used it for testing. But I played through it. And, you know, I was the 23rd person to play for it, apparently, as my badge proclaims.
Oh, yeah. But there's a photo on the site, actually.
Yeah. But when I got through that, through the campaign, that's not actually the whole campaign. That's the thing. At that point in early access, that's where the campaign ends. When you're working for the overlords, the aliens, and then at the end, when you go to your last performance review, that a bomb appears and blows them up and you fall out of the ship and then the humans pick you up. And it's like, that's just where the game ends originally. Well, you wake up in the human base and you can talk to them for a minute and then that acts as like the puzzle builder world, essentially.
Oh, right, yeah.
So you could go in there and build user puzzles. And that's where it ended originally, which was great. But then, and still quite a like dramatic twist even, I guess. But then once they...
For a puzzle game.
Yeah. But then once you put in the whole second campaign, the Resistance campaign, and the puzzle mechanics start getting even more ridiculous, and then it also has its own story of like trying to escape the overlords and get back to Earth and all that stuff. It's like, this is even better. But then the fact that I played it and basically stopped and then came back to it is like, it slightly messed up the awesomeness of those reveals of it coming in parts.
Right, yeah. Because you weren't you were in the zone and then came out of the zone and then had to get back in it.
Yeah.
It's safe to say it's probably the most ambitious Zachtronics game.
Sure.
Yeah. But, like, because he hasn't done anything on that scale since, right?
No, not like a 3D actual game. Still, his 2D quality games are still great.
Opus Magnum and Shenzhen are the two you've done, haven't they?
Yeah, and there's a new one that's just come out, which I may get into.
How does he make so many of them?
Well, let's be honest, some of them are quite similar. Like this new one looks quite a lot like another Opus Magnum.
All right. Another alchemy, another
chemical base, like moving the atoms around type thing. Mm. And then Space Game, obviously, pretty much the same idea.
Progenitor.
And then the, whatever it was called, the Flash game, Al, it's Codex of Alchemical Engineering.
Yeah.
So yeah, he does make the same game several times, essentially. But and it's obviously Shenzhen, there's the prequel to that, TIS 100.
Oh yeah. that was Shenzhen's pretty much the sequel to that.
Isn't yeah. It? But they're still all great.
I mean, it to fit the way you think, I suppose, it's changing the puzzle.
Yeah.
Just enough to keep you interested, right?
Yes. Exactly.
It's like it's going from from Factorio to Automa Factory.
Yeah, another one of those games. But it's not like I would play more puzzles in one of those games. Like that was why, like when Space Game did that whole the journal where they just kept adding more and more puzzles. It was like great. I just keep putting more puzzles in it. It's fine. I'll continue to play that. I even did the DLC in Space Game.
It's a bit like Picross.
Yeah.
Just give me more Picross, I'm happy.
Yeah, more puzzles, even though it's the same puzzle.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the end of my list. That's just like, those were interesting games and shit that I wanted to talk about and to fill time in the special podcast. Those were the concepts I came up with.
Nicely filled.
I would argue that a lot of that is actually more recent than I was expecting from you. Like, well, I think nothing back in the old Atari days.
Or well, like... I think that's what we talked about when we were first talking about making this podcast about older games. It's just like I don't really remember.
Yeah, I realized that I didn't really play many games before 1996.
Like, I mean, I guess if I wanted to add just like a couple more to the just names of cool games, it was like. I guess there was Hostile Waters. There was Freelancer.
Oh, yeah.
There was, yeah.
There was Freelancer. Oh, man, can we talk about how they should make a Freelancer sequel?
I guess.
Or not a sequel, but like a spiritual sequel. Because like, yeah. I don't... That seems like the perfect framework for a game. I just wonder what it would be... If you compare that, like, how much would it have to be like, you know, Elite Dangerous? Or like, how much would it have to be...
Well, like, I mean, it's X3, isn't it? It's like the X games are basically maybe. Like the sort of Freelancer upgraded to more, not exactly modern. But
they have zero personality at all, those
yeah,
X games.
Yeah, I know, that's the trouble
like,
with those.
That's the thing about Freelancer is it had a lot of personality and it had these kind of weird, like, you know, the concept. I quite like the stupid idea of the colony ships and then they set up their own sort of, you know, based space, on the continents of Earth. Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. Space England and Space Germany and... Space America. That was kind of cool.
Or was it Space Japan?
The thing that you couldn't do, I think, is like, you'd have to, of course, this is really hard. It wouldn't have to be full on. What's it called? What's the stupid game that promised everything and didn't deliver it?
No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where you fly down to the planet necessarily, but like you couldn't just do that docking ring thing again. I think you'd have to do something.
Yeah,
and
probably.
then the like the lanes, they make it they make it really obvious that it's just a like really small flat solar system where none of the planets actually move, and it doesn't really. You'd have to do something else in terms of the transiting around the systems.
I mean, I'm not even sure if you would really. I mean, they sort of. Unless you had like random events that mess up the lanes a bit more.
Well that's what they did, right?
Like, yeah, I know, but like permanently take those lanes out for a while. Or
well, I think if you wanted to keep the whole concept of lanes, you'd need to be like, you'd need to make it less obvious that everything was tiny and like you don't have a lane that leads between two planets. Only have lanes that go like out into an asteroid field or whatever.
Well, but then why would you build them? Like, that's the thing. You need to solve that problem of, I guess, for mining. But obviously, it doesn't have to be as massive and detailed as, like, well, not detailed. It doesn't have to be as giant scale as, like, EVE.
Well, it's like you just don't want it to be procedural. That's the trick. You don't want to be No Man's Sky.
Exactly.
Where everything is just procedural.
Well, I could do without the planet stuff, right? Just keep everything in space to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, that works.
It's not like you did anything on the planet.
What I mean. I think I would like to expand it so you did a little on the planet, maybe, or something, or I don't know. But
even
like,
if it's just somewhere you land, right?
Yeah, that would be fine.
On the planet and just it's a base.
And a bit more fun to like docking in a space station, not full on Elite Dangerous where it's like hardcore trying to fucking land the thing, but just
a
little bit
more.
You're
saying you want Mass Effect but with space combat?
Yeah. Well, that's well, if you think about it, Freelancer is not that far off that. It's just like, it, you know, obviously Mass Effect is way heavier on the RPG elements. You could go a lot lighter.
We'll ever find out who owns the stations, though.
But yeah, Freelancer and Mass Effect 2 are not actually that... You know, you could merge those concepts, don't you think? And it would be cool.
My head is now thinking, what if they did a Cowboy Bebop game?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Because in Cowboy Bebop, they have those gates, right? To fly around the solar system. And that is cool. Although they're more like the inter-system gates in... what are they called? In Freelancer, right?
Yeah.
Because they're more like jump gates. Yeah.
Well, neither of us have played Everspace. Aren't those games down this sort of direction?
I have no idea.
Everspace and Everspace 2. Well, Everspace 2 is not out yet, but...
Well, maybe. But, like, the other thing about Freelancer was just, like, it was such a weird control scheme. That was one of the things that made it very distinct from all the other space games.
The mouse-based aiming, at the time was kind of new.
And, like, the, ships and weapons system was kind of nice. It wasn't overly complicated, but it made it slightly interesting, where you like loot special weapons off secretly hidden wrecked ships and stuff. It was kind of cool.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're saying to get me into a space shooter again.
I just don't want the full-on freaking Star Citizen. I want Freelancer, something a bit more.
You don't
fun
want to have to like adjust your shield balance or whatever, like old school Star Wars.
No, I mean that was fine in X-Wing because that was the whole point, and that was all you were doing. It didn't have everything else. But yeah, exactly that. Like obviously,
Well, even Wing Commander, had the tri-state power system, right? Did you want weapons, engines, or
shields? Or shields, yeah. But that's
just
X-Wing.
You could move it around the triangle.
I mean, I wouldn't mind that. That's not so bad. I haven't seen that in a console game ever.
It just needs to be like medium complexity, not like Super Sim.
I bet that stuff's in Elite. Like, right?
Oh,
must be in Elite, right?
Probably.
And that's a console game. So
that might be like three quarters complexity, not like half. that's slightly edging further up.
It's edging too far and not enough like personality in terms of... too procedural in terms of missions. That's the problem.
Elite seems really cool, but like, and I know a guy who's like super into it on the PlayStation, but
it just seems a bit
because it's one of those games where you have to invest. It's like it's a bit like Eve in that, but just without the subscription. Yeah, you have to invest yourself in it, and progress is slow and meaningful. But
it seems a bit lonely. That's all. Freelancer is not lonely. You're constantly meeting people and different characters and weird stuff and going through. Like, there's no, it's much more like Mass Effect, right? Which is not lonely at all, right? You're constantly interacting with people, whereas Elite Dangerous just feels a bit lonely, that's all.
Yeah.
And impersonal, somehow.
I could agree with that.
I guess it's just because Freelancer has a story. I guess that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, you spend basically your entire time playing the story. There's, like, those occasional bits where it's just like, go out and make some money, but then that's, like, two missions, and you're straight back into more
story.
It's
like Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead. Right? You do side missions, and then you come back to the main story.
The side missions were where it was procedural, wasn't it really? Because they weren't that interesting.
And they'd
be like, go shoot some dudes. No.
And you always did the shoot dudes ones because the other ones were just too inconvenient. Yeah. The bombing runs and all that, and the mining, like all that.
Yeah.
Just quickly go out, shoot dudes, make the money you need, and then get back into that story.
Get back into it, yeah.
I mean, it had all that cool stuff about the sort of edge of space, the uncharted territory, the wormholes.
Yeah, there was a lot of that game that you didn't actually have to see, trick.
I mean, that's what's brilliant, right? You want secrets in a game like this. Like, you want to be able to go slightly outside the bounds. You want that Breath of the Wild effect, but maybe not as big as, and as complex as Breath of the Wild.
It doesn't have to be that far,
Because you don't have you've got the slight problem in space that you can't see interesting stuff half the time, but you kind of want something there to draw you in off the beaten path for some reason. Yeah.
I mean, and then make it wacky when you get there. Whatever.
Well, I mean, that's still a thing. Once the Fargoids eventually made it into Elite Dangerous and they can pull you out of hyperspace and all that's still a thing. Apparently that's one of the coolest things in Elite Dangerous. They have a moment where like you'll be in hyperspace and you'll get pulled out of it, but it'll be the first time that it's happened to you. But you don't just pull out, like your entire system, your ship goes dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Elite, you can look around and it's like, you know, all of your systems are suddenly off and you're like, oh, what the hell? What's going on? But then it will do the thing where the giant Thargoid mothership will fly slowly from behind and come in front of you before everything lights up on it. And then the situation goes bad and it's like, okay, yeah, you did something. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can get behind that.
Anyway, yeah, it's true.
But all of that was never in the original game. That's the amazing thing about Elite. It was like, if you want to look at that, you know, send some praise in that game's direction, it's just like everything that Elite is now, it's kind of wasn't that at launch. It's one of those games. It's like all of the you know, the Thargoids weren't in it for ages after it first came out. But they were dropping hints in the universe every now and then and be like, oh, there's a thing over here that's weird. And it's like, what does that do? And then it eventually all led to stuff. It's like they played it well. So I've got respect for them for that.
It was a community-driven story, I suppose.
Mm. That only works once, though.
Yeah, it only works if you're in it. It wouldn't work for us now.
What was the other game, Zach?
You said Freelancer and something else.
Hostile Wars.
Well, yeah.
A game that you could argue that I stole as one of my favorite games from that.
Well, no, I think you...
Because basically, the way I remember this happening was Dan got the demo off a PC Gamer disc and showed me it. And then Dan went on holiday and I went down and bought the game and played it for that whole week he was away.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
That's pretty much how that went.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that's a good demo. I mean,
a lot of demos in the old days were good.
That game was an example of a sequel to something, well, a spiritual sequel basically to something that made it a lot better. And like, it's basically Carrier Command, right? Which was impossible to fucking play. I don't know if I never got anywhere in Carrier Command.
But I would have said that's not a thing that anyone did specifically. That was just like the natural progress of games in that age.
Yeah, that's true. I guess
old ideas that were incredibly esoteric and impossible to play at the time was like, now we can just make this a functional game.
Yeah, but it had a great weird story as well, written by Warren Ellis,
Baker,
right?
Wasn't it?
Yep. And narrated by Tom Baker. Yeah. I mean, the characters were a bit stiff, like the human characters.
The ones that were literally computer chips.
Yeah, yeah. The computer chips had more personality than the
actual
humans. Yeah, Walker and Church. But yeah, man. The whole thing of like having like a light RTS where you can take control of the vehicles and switch between them. Like, why isn't that more of a thing? I don't know.
Battle Zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's another one. Not personally, I prefer Hostile, but
no, Battlezone 1 was far too difficult.
Yeah,
I really struggled with that game. I couldn't get past, I don't think I got past the first bloody mission.
Yeah,
like it was super, super hard. Battlefield 2, I think, Battlezone 2, I think I had a slightly better time with. But I didn't have the full version of that for very long, so I didn't get very far.
Yeah, what would you do?
I know what you mean. It's tricky. Like, I mean, Hostile is still great in concept, but the bit I always like, my negativity side with that game was just like, oh, it's all about the cheese and that, right? You get a hover tank and stay out of range with the missile launcher.
Well, the problem was that it had no balance. Like, the only viable weapon was the longbow missiles, because otherwise the enemies would outrange you and you'd be fucked.
And the longbow missiles weren't that fun, because you were constantly waiting for them to recharge, which isn't a fun mechanic, really. Like, it was fun firing off a whole volley at the start, and then you were just, like, pressing the button as soon as you could. Yeah, that was kind of annoying. I mean, it's not that fun.
There was no real impetus in just charging in guns blazing. It wasn't really a viable strategy.
I mean, the only time it became viable was like when you'd have secured everything to the point where you could just stick a chain gun on a tank and just run into a base and just use that to demolish it faster. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like you couldn't use it as an actual functional weapon.
No.
It was just like useful that it did
the
more damage.
Crew.
Yeah.
And you couldn't really coordinate an attack where you were playing one part of it.
No, because the AI was kind of too dumb to manage themselves.
Exactly, yeah. But that's something that could
defense, really, and defense only, right?
Yeah. or just have them follow you when you're going in for the cleanup.
Yeah.
And the helicopters were a little too weak to be useful most of the time.
Yeah, so there was a lot of problems with its balance in general. Rob's hue lights are currently just randomly changing colour on us.
Don't worry, it means a thing.
No, I'm sure it does.
Hue.
You didn't turn on the on-air lights.
I didn't turn on the on-air lights today.
So anyway, I guess I'm done. I'm sure I'll maybe come up with any other secondary old games to talk about, but someone else should actually do their thing.
Whatever that was good stuff. You've mostly mentioned all of the weird, obscure games that we like, that you like, and we like better than mainstream games, which is the thing.
All those good ones.
Like I said, I'm just a little surprised we didn't go further back, but I guess we're... I don't know, too dumb and too...
Well, the thing about like when we played...
talk about Sonic 3.
But whenever you think back to playing old games as like when you were younger, it's just like, why were we so dumb? It's not like child... There's a specific like set of dumbness where it's like you've got child dumb where it's just like you just literally don't understand what you're doing and you're just flailing at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you have like the mid-age of dumb where it's just like you somehow don't perceive how games and mechanics work. I mean, I guess that is just a learning thing. You just learn how things work over time. But like, it's that specific age of dumb where it's like you go back to playing those, go back and play those games now. You're like, oh yeah, this is just like a regular-ass video game. Why was this ever a problem?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think why we're playing like 95, but I was thinking about like Command and Conquer. Like, I would never have got to the end of Command and Conquer, I don't think.
No.
I mean, I did.
I was 10.
In fact, I didn't get to the end of either of them. Like, I got really stuck.
So you get
well
to like the commando level, and you're how do I manage this?
Mission 6. I remember the number because I was like, it was just such a pain. I had a better time with Red Alert, but I don't think I finished Red Alert.
The tiny mission in that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
As well.
And that had timed missions, didn't it? That had a bit where you were indoors with like...
Yeah,
infantry.
The indoors missions were weird.
Yeah, it's fucking weird. Yeah.
You had dog squads only, wasn't there? Like,
yeah, fucking managing the dogs even was...
Yeah, because they kill you instantly, right? If you're the spy.
Yeah.
Red Alert did at least have the INI file. Just go in and make.
Well, that's just it. That's what we did as kids, right? It's just cheap because it's the only way. You're too dumb to do it properly.
And make mammoth tanks fire invisible dogs.
Yep.
Because why not?
Was Command & Conquer actually a good? And that's what I'm wondering now. I'm looking at this remaster. It definitely was a good game, right? It had great production values. Like probably better than most of the stuff today. To be honest, in some ways.
I mean. This is the thing, like it's a good RTS in the sense that both teams are pretty well balanced, right?
And distinct.
And still distinct. It's, you know, it was the I mean, what came after it, like StarCraft, I suppose, was its main rival at that point.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And, you know,
and
StarCraft has definitely kept that's lasted a lot longer than CNC has.
That's true.
But it probably a lot less games, and it probably learned from CNC quite a lot.
Maybe. I remember thinking Generals was pretty okay. Especially
the Generals is a good
pack one.
Yeah. I mean, Red Alert 2 was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, Red Alert 2 is great.
There's not the expansion pack, though.
Better than Tiberium Sun, anyway.
Yeah. Famously disappointing. I don't. What was so bad about Tiberium Sun? It definitely wasn't that good. But like,
I never played it. So I'm.
I played it. It was like isometric. They changed it to be or like three-quarter.
Yeah.
Like, tiles,
a slightly weird
side-on
angle.
Yeah.
I mean, Red Alert 2 was that same angle, though.
Right? Yeah, it was.
I think it was just like the mission design of Tiberium Sun was awkward.
I mean, wasn't it like
FMV was terrible. it was so cheesy.
Wasn't it made super annoying by the burrowing tanks and things like that?
They had too much stuff that could bypass defenses, and the defenses you have are even awkward, like the fucking firestorm walls where you could only turn them on for a certain amount of time.
Yeah,
because like the end of the original CNC, like, it was like massive hype for Tiberium Sun with the kind of mech or whatever, and it's like, this is going to be awesome.
They announced their own sequel
at the end of the game, which had one of the best endings of any game, and it had two separate endings, and they were both great, right? Like the Nod ending was hilarious, where you had the like cyber warriors flying through cyberspace and getting very
and then
stupid.
You blow up,
and then you blow up whatever you want. Yeah, exactly. That was fun. Command & Conquer was actually good, but I wouldn't put it on my list of pre-2010 games.
What would you put on your list of pre-2010 games?
Let's see. Well, I've just added one. Well, we have to cut them down. So a lot of them, the obvious ones, that's the thing. So that aren't worth talking about. So
yes, just name them and we'll move through.
I'll just name ones that are too obvious to talk about. So they are Super Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Half-Life.
Yep.
Classic. Halo.
Classic.
We
could talk about Halo. I mean, I was contemplating talking about Halo 2.
Too obvious.
I don't know what I'd say though.
good job.
That's why I said I was thinking about it, just because, like, I mean, it didn't have an hour count on it, but I'm pretty sure it was the first game to beat out Final Fantasy VIII in terms of how much time I spent with a game.
Yeah, but you had circumstances which also enhanced that.
Yeah, exactly. It came out when LAN parties could be arranged easily, and I had lots of crews that were up for LAN parties
and like Taylor.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think what's descending order of obviousness. Like, let's see. Batman Arkham Asylum is 2009. So it sneaks in there. I don't know if that's worth talking about.
I think
about.
We played it a little late anyway, so we might have actually covered it on early.
Yeah,
podcast.
I might have covered it. Okay, I'll cross that one off.
I mean, it is brilliant, though.
Yeah.
It's my favourite of the Batman.
I mean, Deus Ex is obvious, but I think that might be my favorite, actually. Although, no, that's too much, isn't it? I don't know. It's a game I like to talk about, anyway.
Yeah.
So,
talk about Deus Ex, because it's like, I don't know. As I mentioned in my EGX coverage this year, I kind of think Cyberpunk is going to bring some of that back.
I really hope so. I really hope so.
But then you remember
like,
what happened with the Deus Ex sequels.
Yeah, the Deus Ex sequels. Like, Human Revolution, I think, is a good game. Not even just an okay game. I think it's good. But as a sequel to Deus Ex, like, obviously Invisible War was a dud or whatever. I didn't even try because I knew it would be bad. Human Revolution, we've covered this because I've said this at the time. This is talking about Human Revolution rather than Deus Ex, but like it has one theme and it just sticks to it. And that's really annoying because Deus Ex had so many themes and they all worked together somehow. That's what I think is amazing about it, is it's just a grab bag of every single conspiracy theory ever, from like the Illuminati to Majestic 12 to like Roswell aliens. Well, obviously that's Majestic 12, but like everything. They just pulled together into one world and made all the conspiracies work together. And like
made them all kind of real. They're not conspiracies. They actually all happened.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like there's a connection. It's like Majestic 12 in Deus Ex, they're a splinter of the Illuminati, and they, you know, the gray aliens are actually genetically engineered weapons or whatever that they had in their lab in Area 51, and it all connects together or whatever in like a weird way. And the plague, you know, that's genetically, oh no, not genetically, well, it's nanomachines, isn't it? Nanotechnology. Yeah. Nanomachine son. It just had so many different themes and things going on, whereas like Human Revolution, it was just post-human, you know, augmentation, and that was it. Whereas that was just one thing in Deus Ex. It just had so much stuff and such a rich world with all of these. Even though it looks terrible, even at the time it looked bad. Like the running around, like sound effects and animations are just appalling.
I remember, like, do you remember the sort of odd dither pattern?
That whole thing. Because it was like, it was Unreal Engine, pretty relatively early Unreal, I think, but used for like quite large environments, right? Because Unreal
was soon after UT, I think.
Yeah, it was roughly around there. And it's very, like, the color palette is very drab, right? It's like, it's not brown or gray, it's just like, I don't know. There's something, it really suits it though. Yeah. It's kind of, even that dither pattern makes it look like a kind of, I don't know, noir-y,
like
rainy,
Matrix green.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that color grading.
Its look is too far off the kind of like, I don't know. It has that old game look that, like, I think System Shock had. Like, so the old look, old game sci-fi kind of has this feel.
And even, like, the music is, like, cheesy, but actually, like, really good in a weird way. Like, after a while, it just sets a kind of tone and atmosphere. That in keeping with the, you know, cheesy music in keeping with the bad graphics, kind of. Not really selling it here, but...
And bad voice acting.
And bad voice acting, yeah.
And the most cliches, conspiracy theories known to man.
Yeah, all combined into something bigger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, because it's such a cheese fest, in a way, that somehow the cheese evolves.
It all kind of works together, and there is some interesting stuff in there, and there is actually some good dialogue in there, like, not well acted necessarily, but, like, all those ideas, like, filtering around, and, like, just random side characters, like, you just go into that clinic in New York, and there's that guy talking about, you know, you've just been fighting the NSF or whatever. This is really early on, but then there's a guy talking about his, like, experiences fighting in, you know, some state. You know, there's all these backstories and stuff going on everywhere. It's not just like pretty ceilings, which is what was in Human Revolution.
Right. Yeah, I remember that now. Sorry, that took a little while for my. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were cool, but that's not how you make cyberpunk or whatever. It had a grounding in. You know, it didn't look that different to the current world, to be honest, in a lot of ways.
I mean, it's supposed to be
more run down.
but only by a generation, right?
Yeah, and like the whole concept of like specking yourself in different directions for doing different things has been done in RPGs to death for ages. But there just seemed to be some kind of promise of agency in Deus Ex that's missing from.
And don't forget Inventory Tetris.
Yeah, I mean,
best inventory system ever.
I don't know about that.
That wasn't even bad. I mean, it was okay.
Sort of makes sense, I guess, as opposed to you just having a weight limit.
I mean, it was hilarious how you ended up with like a laser dragon sword thing that you would use to open boxes.
It was your only melee weapon.
But that whole that was a fun little bit with Maggie Chow or whatever her name was. You know, in Hong Kong, like, it was really globetrotting, wasn't it? It's a long game, right? Like, you go all over the place, like Vandenberg Air Force Base, and
but conveniently everywhere it's always night.
And it's always night, of course, and you always have to wear sunglasses, like, so it works really well. I don't know, and I like going back to your home base or whatever. I always like that in games, but then they flip it over and make it like it's actually the evil base after all and stuff like that. You know, conspiracies. I don't know. It's all cliches, all wrapped together. But I just, it just worked really well. I don't think they've done that quite as well since. Maybe Cyberpunk will do it. I'm sort of hopeful.
Yeah, I think it could. Well, I mean, that game has the potential to be like a "there is no one you trust" kind of thing. It's like the whole thing is going to be messy in every direction.
It blew my mind when I realized you could actually save your brother in Deus Ex. Doesn't really do much, but it's kind of cool.
And annoyingly difficult, though.
Yeah, it's quite difficult, but I mean, but you can always cheese it. That was the thing about Deus Ex, isn't it? There's usually a way to, because the AI was so dumb, you could probably figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
To set up a lot of lambs. Like, it had a lot of cool tools, like, even but though there was no physics. Yeah. It's impressive how much you could do given there was no physics, right, in the game. Or in terms of like setting up traps and things and doing stuff.
And it was cool apart from when it eventually screws you if you get too fancy.
Yeah.
Like that time when I like super early I spec'd for like extra heavy lifting so I could move the giant crates around.
Oh yeah.
But then I got like the extra tier of that lets you move the super big ones. And then when you go to Battery Park and there's the hexagonal fortress thing.
Yeah, the
I
castle.
I used the huge crates out there to build a staircase to get on top of it and shoot the guys inside. Because I thought that's a great stealth method. But then the game doesn't really recognize that.
It doesn't really let you do all that. The
scripting.
You found a sequence break.
Well, it's not really a sequence break. It's like the game just doesn't realize that you've done it, and like because it doesn't detect that you're in the zone because you're like on top of the building and you're not really meant to even be up there, and it's like weird. But yeah, it's like you can do cool things, but sometimes you can push it slightly too far.
I really remember like all the characters, like you know, like Anna Navarra and Gunter Herrmann and Mandalay, isn't it? And Alex Jacobson, Tracer Tong. Like, there's not many games where I can, you know, I guess like Mass Effect I can. Yeah, but yeah.